fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish.
I just love that song. All right. And it's funny. I mean, we started playing that song in 1985 with the whole Fish and Franks thing and that song. And it's just, I enjoy it as much today as I did back then. We've got a lot of fish in the area right now. It's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about. Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, the Blind Tarpon himself. We got RJ in the control booth. And this Fish and Franks. And I got to tell you, it has been one heck of a week for as far as fishing. The customer count in the store is actually up. And we actually went from about 40% below average. Right now we're running about 15% above average.
Nice.
And so a lot more people making the trek through. It could be because now we've got we went from this kind of cozy, overcrowded, I mean, can't turn around space. I mean,
how's that cozy?
What's that?
How's that cozy?
It felt cozy to me. It felt comfortable.
Oh, okay.
I like that little kind of
claustrophobic
look. Yeah, okay. I was kind of into it a little darker, you know, finding stuff in the bottom of the corner. We had one guy came in, looked like Mary Poppins. He put his arms out, was twirling around, going, "Oh my God, I can't believe this space. Look at this." I started humming the theme to Sound of Music. You know, it's like, geez. It's just been quite an array. A woman came in today, and when Robert and I were designing all this, we were kind of, because you have to work with existing openings. You can't, like, create new openings and stuff like that. So it's all kind of a big maze. Robert calls it our Easter egg hunt.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, woman said, gee, you go around this corner, you go through here, and then all of a sudden there's all this different stuff. So hopefully the new look, and we started building the seminar area today. Robert and I got to sit on the first benches.
It's going to be pretty nice once it's all done.
Yeah, you're going to have a bench seat and a table in front of you, so, you know, everybody facing the same direction. Kind of like desk and a chair at school, you know?
Right.
It's going to be neat for the seminars.
Can we carve our names in the desktop just like school?
Yes, you could absolutely do that. That'll be awesome. Yeah, that would be actually kind of cool if people were carving their name, because it's, all pressure-treated lumber bench and table and all that. It's not going to be wonderful, but it's going to be nice. It's going to be pretty cool. A lot of snook on the east side of the harbor getting into the fishing. Strike King Lewis does a show on the Sportsman's Network, and it's called Fish Hard. And when I was in with them at ICAST, we were talking, and I said, you know what you guys need to do is do a show about using lures in salt water and then taking them over and catching freshwater fish with. So we just finished the filming of that. We were 2 days. When you see the show, it's going to be, you know, the episodes. It took 2 days to film this. We did filming on Tuesday and Wednesday. The saltwater segment was actually, we have the same shirts and the same clothes on and all that, but it was actually took a day and a half, because the first day we were out, caught a ton of snook, but we lost every fish that was over 24 inches. Couldn't get them to the boat. I mean, it was just one of those days where it wasn't going to work out. So the next day we went back out and got a bunch of snook. Carl is on the show. Buttigieg, KB Backcountry Charters. I am not appearing on this episode. I was the one getting them where they had to be, making sure everything was going to work.
You organized it.
Yeah, I was very busy with trying to get everything on that we wanted on, the store shots, the freshwater spots. We went to a friend of mine who has a lake, and they caught, I forget how many fish. Within two casts, they were hooking doubles. So a lot of freshwater fish, a lot of cool saltwater fish. But it was weird on the east side of the harbor, because I'm not the only one who noticed it. There was like, you would catch a lot of snook, but 20 inches was probably the average. Some of them even smaller. And we were hooking fish between, I would say, 26 and 30. But we really, that first day, never landed a decent snook. You know, 30 inches is a nice snook.
Right.
The second day they did. But
yeah, but we also heard multiple reports from people that went fishing that same day as you and had the same struggle. So it wasn't just, you know, because some days you blame yourself, some days you can blame the tide or the weather, and there's just some days where fishing just can be funky.
Right.
And when you have several people having issues that were catching fish before you.
Well, there's captains out there doing the chumming with white bait that literally never landed a snook that day.
Right.
And they were everything they could do, and they could see the fish blowing up and stuff. What's really amazing is the amount of jacks around the harbor. The price of jack crevel must have dropped. People don't realize jack crevel is one of the higher priced food fish. And the smaller ones are considered a delicacy in several countries. And the large, excuse me, the larger ones sell pretty good, but not as much as the smaller ones. But we have so many jacks in the harbor right now. If we're watching one guy chum and boom, 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 I'm going, those aren't snook. He was literally out there, and I saw probably 20 blow-ups in the few minutes because we stopped and watched him to see what was going on. And out of that, I'd say two were snook blow-ups. The rest of them was all jack crevels. And I start watching land fish, they were all jacks.
Yeah.
And that was way back on the flats on the east side. We were about two sets of islands in a little pothole.
That's in a little ways.
Yeah, they weren't. This wasn't out in front of the islands, out by the sandbar. This was two sets of islands back on the east side. Carl took us back. What you're looking for when you go back on that east side, we caught about a 26-inch Goliath grouper. We caught some nice 26, 27-inch redfish, a lot of small snook, some jacks. But you idle through those islands. If you run, you're not going to find the place where you want to go fishing. It's too hard to see. You can't see the contours of the bottom. Go through a couple of the islands and work your way past. They're not quite in rows, but when you get on that east side, if you go in at Pirate Harbor, turn back north, going to the left, and go up, count about five islands up on the outside. And then shut the boat down as slow as you can go and start idling. Now, if you've got electric trolling motor on the front of your boat, it's a good idea just to get up there. And have a rod rigged up. Now, we were using the Strike King Rage Swimmers. Some of the shimmy sticks, tore those in half. I'll get to some of the other stuff we were doing. But that Strike King Rage Swimmer, one of the cool tricks we did was we put the jig head on. After a couple fish, it got kind of loose, and we cut the front of it off where the hook goes in, where the jig head goes in.
Yeah.
It made it a little shorter. As we shortened it up, we actually were catching more fish with it. But it's got ridges all the way down the bait, and those ridges actually face forward. Now, some of the other brands out there that have the same look, the ridges are just round or the ridges face the back.
That's where I've seen that lure before. Well, similar. Not that lure, but similar.
Okay.
It was that old skeleton shad by...
Oh, yeah.
Old Bayside, I think it was.
Yeah, it was one of those.
It was similar.
And what those were just kind of bumps, but they were round ridges.
Right.
And what Strike King has done, because you can't... You know, there's only so many body shapes, so many body styles, so you're always trying to create your own new perspective on it. What they did was a little cupping facing the forward direction.
Instead of being hydrodynamic, it's now reverse, so it's actually working against the water.
Exactly, and it creates a little bit of extra cavitation, a little more wiggle for the tail, and we actually were doing better back there by taking off a good half inch. Maybe 3/4 of an inch.
Well, look at the bait that's around. That doesn't surprise me. A little bit smaller would kind of match up, right?
Exactly. Now, we were using the white, and they got kind of a green shad-looking color. I don't really know the name of it. I had not used the Rage Swimmer before. I've used the Rage Claw, the Curl Tails, a ton of those Rage baits, because they have that lip on whatever paddle or curl they are to add that extra movement, the extra cavitation. So I really like the Rage brand, but I'd never fished the Rage Swimmer before. And we're out there playing with it, and I'm sitting there because I was fishing a little bit, but not much. I was kind of busy with the other stuff. And I'm feeling it, and I could feel those things on there and that forward cup on it. And so we talked about that on camera a bit and other stuff. But it was kind of interesting. But what we do is go back through the islands, and it's real flat, real shallow. And then all of a sudden, you're going to see this little bit of a drop, maybe 6 inches. And you can see where the water's kind of washing out between a couple of the islands. And some of the best ones are where it makes kind of an S curve to it and then ends up in a T or another intersection. And that water kind of swirls, picks up some of that sand and muck out of it, and creates these deeper troughs slash holes. But they're more like troughs. I wouldn't call them holes, because you're going to have a kind of a long trough going between a couple of the islands. And then you look on other islands, and it maintains the depth. And you don't want that. You want to go between islands where you can see 6 inches to a foot more water. And that's what you're really looking for. And it's you have to do it yourself.
Well, a trough,
you're not going to get in on a chart.
A trough is a perfect description of it, because it's kind of, you know, we talk about potholes all the time.
Right.
You know, which is basically a drop-off of anywhere from 6 inches to a foot, but they're usually round and very distinguished. Those troughs can be tricky to explain until you actually see one and figure it out, because it is almost literally like a rain gutter or a trough. You know, it's just a nice drop-off in a ditch that can run 50 feet or 200 feet.
And it's really surprising what that extra 6 inches, a foot of water will hold. And now the best bet is, if you're going along, you're looking at the island, if that trough continues right up to the island. Now you got to picture a river in your head, because the outside bend of a river is going to be deeper than the inside of the bend. Because when water moves, the water that starts at the river and goes around a curve all goes through at the exact same time. So it's not like, and so in order for that water to start the curve and end the curve together the way it went into the curve, the water on the outside has to move much faster than the water on the inside. It's a bigger radius around the outside than it is on the inside of a curve. So the water on the inside is going much slower. Now, with that slower water tends to drop sediment out of the water. Little bits of sand and particles. So the inside of that is going to be shallower because it's built up. The outside of that curve is always going to be deeper because the water moves faster. So it's not going to be dropping anything. It's actually going to be taking stuff with it, undercutting, cutting that area deeper. So when you're going between the islands, and remember how I said you're looking for stuff that actually has kind of an S pattern where you've got the curves going through the islands in that serpentine shape. The outside of the bends are going to be what you're looking at. So it's the outside of the S parts. That's where it's going to be a little deeper. The deeper water is going to run right up to the mangroves. The other bend, the inside bend, is going to be your shallower spot. You're not going to get fish holding there. So you're going to keep the boat from middle to the inside of the bend, fishing the bigger outside bends, casting over there. That's where you're going to get into it. And the hard part about it is you're probably not going to catch fish the first time you find it. Because if you're smart, you're going to kind of work your way through it, kind of map it out in your head, go somewhere else, and then come back to that spot an hour later when it's quiet after your boat's gone. Then you get started right at the beginning. You fish those outside ends. You can already, the first time you pick, where's the boat going to be? Where am I going to cast to? I don't want to cast on the fish. So I want to get as far away from the deepest water into as shallow water as I can run the boat, casting into that deeper side. So you're going to start working that, say, left-hand side. And then you're going to kind of cut straight across and work the right-hand side. You don't want to keep the boat on the same side going through both of the S's. Say if the outside bend is on your left, you're going to fish from the right hand to the left. And as it curves to go the other way, you're going to switch. And you're going to be on the left fishing to the right. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
I even followed that.
Okay. Well, it's hard when you're trying to explain it to people on the radio. Now, by taking those, we really lightened up the jig heads. 1/8 ounce was as heavy as we wanted to go. Now, I will endorse that Rage Tail Swimmer for one more thing. It's got a huge paddle tail on it, And with those forward-facing ribs, we were able to really slow it down. I mean,
oh,
make it go
cool.
Really, really slow. With that 1/8 ounce, it was a very buoyant bait, and we were able to pitch it up to the mangroves, give a little pull, because, like, when it hits the water, you want it to dart just a little bit. Picture a finger mullet jumping up out of the water, landing in, making a little bit of dart, then starting to swim again. That would be the way you want to cast those. So, and they don't do a bad job of skipping either, because it's kind of a bulky bait.
Right.
Able to, you know, I watched Carl able to skip it up, and the other guy, Andrew, who is works for Strike King, was, the two of them were filming together, and they were actually able to get some nice skips going back right up under some of the branches with that bait. And as big as it was, I didn't think that was going to work. We were using the ones about 4 inches long. But actually got a couple skips out of them. But the light jig head, the extra buoyancy, they were a little slow down, and that's where you got the redfish out of. The little snook were traveling. I watched one come probably 6 feet off a shoreline to go get it.
Nice.
Now, you're going to need polarized glasses and a hat with a big bill on it.
Oh, yeah.
Even as just a standard ball cap, but a hat and polarized glasses. Now, I'm going to say the brown lenses are what you're going to want back there. You're going to need all the definition you can get. So don't look like if you see somebody wearing glasses, you're looking at them from the outside. It's a side where you look from. What the mirror are and all that on the outside is irrelevant. That's just cosmetic. That's so you can look cool. It's the side you're looking through. You want to hold them away from you. Look, if you see a brown tint to it, I'm learning the more I match the color of my lenses to the color of the water, the better I see the definition of the fish.
Well, so that's very true, because, I mean, it's not just about the definition of the fish. From what I understand, that amber finish in shallower water that's tannic helps reduce the reflection from the bottom sand and the surface water itself. So I think that's what gives you a little bit more definition in that shallower tannic water.
Yeah, I'm,
that's what I've had described to me a couple different times, and because of my vision, it sucks either way.
Yeah, you
but
can't see no matter what it
whether
is.
I use the amber or whether I use the gray, I can't distinguish the difference, but I've had several people.
You want to use the grays or the greens because it's going to tone down the light. Your eyes are so light sensitive.
Right.
But if you've got normal vision or just, you know, kind of bad vision, whatever, but if you use the brown lenses back there, you're going to see that definition of fish. I would say 7 out of 10 fish we caught were sight casted. We could literally see them up by the sandbars and we're pitching in front of them as they move. So it's kind of like skeet shooting. You know, you don't shoot at the skeet. You shoot where you think it's going to be by the time the shot gets there. And it's the same thing with those fish. If they're sitting still, if you can cast beyond them or to the side, a little bit past and maybe a little bit in front of them. And a lot of it was underhand casting. You know, it was almost like flipping and pitching because we were in pretty close quarters sometimes.
Right.
But a lot of sidearm casting, a lot of underhand, and trying to get that bait to plop into the water, not hit real hard, so it didn't scare the fish but got their attention.
Right.
That was kind of a key thing. And then as you're reeling it right in front of them, you could literally watch that fish go from up, I'm laying here, this is cool, to, oh, what's that? Boom, and go hit it. It was really cool to watch.
Well, and this is the perfect time of year for that because you kind of got the best of both worlds going on. One, no rain, so you've got super clear water, and every day it's getting clearer and clearer on both sides of the harbor. But also, it's warm. Been a little bit cooler nights, not much, but warm enough water where those fish are still pretty aggressive but not so hot that they're lethargic. So it's kind of that perfect time of year for any sight angler out there.
And it's really great, but it does mean you have to be a lot quieter.
Oh,
these
yes.
fish can see you. Look for shirts, clothes that have different colors on them. If it's the same color, you want to think the fish is in the water looking up at an angle. So behind you is going to be blue sky, green leaves, brown leaves, white clouds. You don't want to wear like solid black, solid white. White would be actually better than black.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you're literally trying to camouflage yourself into the background from where the fish are and try and limit a lot of big movements. We had no problem. We could walk on the boat if we were quiet. If you hard-stepped, the fish would move off. If you banged anything, the fish would move off. It's the one neat thing about fishing the artificials and the lures, where more so than the bait. If you're fishing bait, you're going to have to leave the live well lid open. And because just that closing of a lid, we watch fish move away from us.
Yeah.
And we were soft closing them. So if you're out there and you're going to fish with shrimp or you're going to fish with white bait or pinfish, you really want to have your lids open. You want to be able to get to the live well, but you got to watch your footsteps. And talking didn't seem to matter. Whether we were laughing, talking loud, whatever, it didn't seem to spook the fish. But it was the unusual sharp noise, like the thud of a foot, the little tick of a live well. I mean, this maybe I'll do it. That was the closing of my cell phone. Yes, I have a flip phone. Okay. Yes, I'm old. Okay. But that's how little of a noise it took to spook them off, because it was weird. It was different. But while we were talking the whole time and laughing, having a good time, that didn't seem to bother the fish at all. I was really surprised at that.
Right.
I think that it has to do with noise being transferred through the hull.
Is that what it?
Yeah, that the hull itself becomes like a big speaker, and if you knock anything, it makes a lot of sound in the water. And as a diver, you can hear that all the time when people are walking around on the deck and things like that. You didn't hear their voices at all, but you heard every footstep. So I think it has to do with the...
So the hull's a sound amplifier.
Right,
oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So if you click something or bang something or stomp on something, it certainly sends the sound to the water much easier than sound penetrating into the water. And the other comment I want to make was on the color white. Reminds me of a story. I was talking to a guy from Audubon, one of the Audubon bird counters. He was talking about why egrets have evolved to be white. And he said all their prey is always underneath them looking up at the sky. He said, and the white blends in better than any other color. And that's why egrets are white and not a different color. And he said also the blue heron has a white chest. And he said that's probably the reason that they evolved that, because the prey are looking up. So you're a fisherman now, and all the fish are always, at least I hope they're always looking up at you.
Yeah, if you get the fish looking down
at you. If he's looking down at you, you've got, you didn't close the bail hole. Yeah, yeah.
But, things went horribly wrong if you're looking up at the fish.
And I've also noticed that a lot of the guides down in the Keys will wear white.
Okay, so mm-hmm. I was so kind of wrong on that, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, white seems to be the one color that will give you the best camouflage against a sky background. Obviously, if it's against a different background, it's not going to help. But, you know, for a fish looking up in your direction and you're wearing white.
Could be the clouds.
Could be the clouds, whatever it is.
They're used to looking up, seeing blue and white.
Blue and white, exactly right, yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
All right. So anyway, there's a number of lures you can use, a number of different baits you can use to do this. But it was really a great experience going back there. We're on the trolling motor, and we were able to just, you know, literally creep along making casts and actually sight fishing these fish, which you don't get to do that much for that much in Charlotte Harbor. We've got 2 to 6 months where that's going to work, depending on how much rain we get. Because the headwaters of Charlotte Harbor are the Myakka River and the Peace River, both of which are very, very slow right now. The Peace River is still only at 300 and some cubic feet a second. Not enough to protect us from red tide. We've basically got it figured out that if it's 800 cubic feet per second of water flow on the Peace, we don't get red tide in the harbor. So we're very, very susceptible to red tide at the moment because we're approaching drought situation.
Yeah.
Now, Little Gasparilla Pass has got some red tide. There's some red tide, what, out about 20 miles?
Yeah, 70 to 90 feet. There's a big patch out there yesterday.
Now, the one thing about it is the red tide is coming into the Little Gasparilla Pass right there. It's still relatively bad up around St. Pete up there. Venice. Now, we don't know of any horrible blooms going on in southwest Florida below St. Pete, Tampa. It's actually still pretty bad up there.
Right.
But down by us, we don't know of any bad patches. But we will let you know. We're going to keep you abreast of where it's at, what's going on with it. But right now, Shell Harbor's clear and green. Boca Grande is good. Gasparilla Sound, the whole area between Bull Bay, Whidden Creek, Catfish Creek, Placida is still good.
Yes.
But it can go bad at any moment. Englewood could go bad. Venice could go bad. But right now, they're not.
Right. And there's no major fish kills at all. Even if there is a patch of red tide around, just because it's reading, whether it's medium or background concentrations, or you're out there and smell it or feel it, it doesn't mean it's necessarily a strong enough red tide to start killing fish, because some of those red tides are just literally very small patches on the surface. It hasn't bloomed to where it's reaching down deep into the water column where it starts to affect those fish and paralyze those fish. So
many
you can go through it and
fishing,
not.
And we're catching fish in an area where there's red tide. We're
absolutely
coughing.
Right.
And it just didn't get down far enough in the water. It was literally only in the first few inches of the water, but 2 feet down, they were fine. They had no idea there was red tide.
Absolutely.
So, right now, trout. Everybody's asking about the trout.
Trout's been surprisingly good. Not as good as it was last week with that front that came through and dropped the temperature a little bit, but you know, the trout have been doing pretty well. There's a lot of small trout. Over on the east side, you get on the outside of the bar, there's a lot of those 12 to 15 inchers around, and they're starting to get in loose schools. But
I heard the same thing on the west side. A lot of 12 to 15 inch trout on the west side of the harbor.
Yeah, same way as you get into Bull and Turtle Bay. If you're willing to drift and cover some ground and either use a little bit larger artificial or a pinfish if you can get them, that's where the guys are picking up the larger trout in that 18 to 22 inch range.
Now, right now, I would say if you want to go out drifting looking for trout, get a DOA that set up with the float, the knocker float with the weight on it, and the DOA shrimp on it.
Right.
That's the easiest way to go out and find trout.
And if you keep the shrimp on it, that's probably going to get you more numbers, but you could still use that same float technique, but I would switch it over to either the big terrorize or a bait buster underneath it.
Really?
Just because as trout get larger, they become more fish eaters, versus the smaller trout are still primarily crustacean feeders as their preferred diet. They'll still take advantage
DOA
of either
bait
one.
Fish looking thing, whatever that goofy one is. We don't sell many of them. We have a few.
The terrorize?
No, the pinfish looking.
Oh, geez, yeah. That would probably work.
I mean, you're
I can't catch anything
trout
on it. I've tried it few times.
I think it's the only bad bait DOA makes.
I think so, personally. I agree with you.
It might be worth a try.
Yeah, it might be worth a try underneath a bobber. Absolutely.
Maybe we could actually find a use for that piece of junk after all these years.
Right.
So if someone's got one, take it out, put it under a bobbing cork. Let us know if it works or not.
Yeah, that would probably be my best bet if I wanted to try to find bigger trout.
I mean, the terrorize, amazing lure. The cow shads, the curl tails. Mark has, I mean, we literally have a 12-foot section of wall, 6.5 feet by 12 feet of nothing but DOA. And it's some of the best stuff on the planet. But he's got that one stupid bait fish thing, and I can't even remember the name of it.
Neither can I.
And that thing is just useless, you know.
It is for us. I'm sure there's somebody that can catch fish on them, but I can't.
I don't know. I think people buy it because it looks like a bait fish.
Yeah.
I don't know if they ever caught a fish with it.
I can catch more on that terrorize, and it looks like nothing compared to that thing.
It reminds me of the Strike King Redfish magic.
Oh, yeah.
Around here, it's magic if you actually get something to eat it.
Yeah.
Take that off, put a different kind of, put a curl tail on it, put a tube bait on it. You could actually catch fish with it. But a stupid paddle tail on that blade.
Yeah, works everywhere else but southwest Florida.
Yeah. It, you know, no. Junk. All right. They got so many good stuff. But I'm just telling you, there is not a brand I know of that I like some of the stuff and laugh at other stuff.
Oh, but absolutely.
That's the only difference. You'll hear it both from us. Let's see. Red Tide, believe it or not, no one really, really understands what causes it to bloom and to go away. I was reading up, I'm going to read up more on it, and I'll give you next week an actual thing on it. But the first explorers to go into Tampa Bay called it the Death Bay, or the Bay of Death, or something like that. It's funny it's named Tampa, but the first times they went there back in the 1700s, 16 and 1700s, the red tide had hit, and the whole bay was full of dead fish. And it was literally nicknamed the Bay of Death or something like that for quite a while.
The name probably got changed as time evolved.
Yeah, but original
the first original maps probably had that big skeleton on it. And
yeah, you know, Bay of Death or Death Bay or something like that. I don't remember. I will learn more about it, but I was just starting to research Red Tide and do all this, and I found this thing from very, very early explorers talking about Tampa Bay and how horrible it was. So, you know, kind of neat things. Anyway, getting into the Gulf of Mexico, there is some patchy red tide stuff out there, pretty much surface stuff. The only thing we're hearing about dying is bait and live wells. But yep. The fishing out there, in 60 miles, this has got to be the most grouper we've heard of
60
caught.
Feet.
60 feet.
Yeah, yeah. They're catching legal grouper. They're catching a ton of small grouper. You know, right at that like 17 to 19 inch range. But they are catching them in that 20 to 24 inch range. Once you get out a little further than that, that's where it's a little more consistent on the legal size grouper. But the snapper fishing has been on fire out there in that 60 to 90 feet of water. Mangrove snapper, larger ones, yellowtail snapper, some really good lane snapper up to 2.5-3 pounds. And then also a lot of guys are free lining baits out and getting the kingfish going and doing pretty exceptionally well. So the biggest suggestion is to kind of drift a bait while you're anchored up or drifting and see if you can pick up a king mackerel that way.
What are they using for bait?
For the king mackerel or for the king mackerel?
For grouper, first of all. Grouper and snapper.
Mostly sardines and squid and some shrimp and pinfish. But the squid and the sardines by far are the best thing going. And, you know, with the king mackerel, have you ever caught a king mackerel, RJ?
Yes, I've caught a couple of kings.
And how did you catch them?
I think we were trolling artificials. It was the bucktails with the silver heads.
Okay. Yeah, some guys will do the bucktails, other guys will do the spoons. And then you've got the depth-specific lures, which a lot of guys right now are doing really good on the king mackerel. And even a few bonita that way while trolling from one reef to the next reef. But the guys that are out there sitting on the reefs right now are freelining a lot of baits out and about and just waiting for that king mackerel, barracuda, or even a cobia to come by and grab that right off the surface. And you can either freeline it, just let it drift in the current, or put it under a bobber. And you never know what's going to hit it. It can be a pretty pleasant surprise.
On the squids, are they using the squid wings or are they using a whole squid?
The real serious guys are using the squid wings because the squid wings, we've finally been able to get them back in after going months without them. And the squid wings are not treated. They're not cleaned and processed the way your smaller bait squid is. So you still got the ammonia, you've still got some of the ink in it, and you can cut it to any specific size you want. But it's just kind of more of a personal preference thing.
Yeah, I always thought, too, that the wings had more attractant in them.
It's more
natural.
That
they're leaving some kind of scent trail in the water.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just got more of a natural effect to it. Plus, you can even make it thinner or thicker because, I mean, depending on where you cut it at on that wing, there's thick spots on it and thin spots on it. And if it's real thick and you want to trim it down, fillet it and just cut it in half and make it even thinner and make strips out of it.
And how are we rigging those?
You have to use circle hooks, you know, when you're using natural bait while fishing for reef species, which we've had to explain to several people this week because we've got some new people moving down and then we've got some guests that aren't real familiar with the Florida laws, so we've been having to explain that to them. But generally speaking, for the grouper, a lot of guys use, like, say, a 6-aught to an 8-aught size inline circle hook in the owner or the VMC are my two personal favorites as far as hook, you know, circle hooks goes, because they're very similar in size to the J hooks. Versus if you get into some of the other brands of circle hooks, their numbers are very hodgepodge, so you can't go just by a size. You have to kind of look at it and pick one that's a little bit bigger. And then if you're going for the snapper and using those squid or pieces, go drop down to, like, say, a 1/0 or a 2/0 is more than fine with it.
Now, for the new fishermen that are moving down here and want to go reef fishing, how do you tell the difference between a circle hook and a J hook?
Circle hook, the tip of the hook actually rolls back towards the shank. It's actually almost takes on a circle shape, versus a J hook is exactly what it says, a J. You know, it's just straight, nice bend with a longer shank on the backside.
Well, the hook on a J hook points straight up.
Straight up.
If you were to hold the hook by the eye, the J hook point goes straight up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hold that circle hook in the same position, the hook comes up, but the point takes a 90-degree turn back towards the shank. It's literally flat on
Correct.
The upward.
Correct. So rolls back on itself and makes, you know, more or less a circle. You know, and they come in different lengths and different sizes. And then you also have inline circle hooks and offset circle hooks, which makes it even more confusing. And the only way to tell, most of the circle hook companies have done better with their packaging, where it'll say either tournament or inline circle hook. And then all the other ones will just say circle hook, offset, sure set, whatever. If it doesn't say tournament or inline on that circle hook, technically it would be illegal to use with natural bait out on the reefs, unfortunately.
Why are we using circle hooks on that?
Why is there a difference between an inline and an offset? Why is one legal and one not?
Being offset, basically the point is not in line with the shank. Like if you were to hold the hook flat looking straight at it with the point and the eyelet looking straight at you rather than a side profile, the point would actually be offset from the shank itself sticking off to the side. That type of hook is no different than really using a J hook, because it can actually hook them in the stomach, the gut, the throat, wherever that hook happens to go, because as it's sliding around with pressure, it's just going to bite into the first piece of skin that it can. Versus in most cases with a true inline circle hook, as you apply pressure, because that barb is pointed straight back to the shank, it's sitting flat, and as it rolls or slides out of that fish's stomach or throat, it'll rotate and turn and hook into the corner of the mouth or the roof of the mouth. In most instances, it's not 100% by any means, but it's better than just the offset circle hook.
Now, one of the things people don't realize is that for when you're fishing for reef species, whether you're in the harbor, in the canals, whatever, a snapper requires a circle hook. The exception of this, the only exception, is if you're on land. If you're fishing from shore or pier or bridge, you're not required to do anything with circle hooks. You can use J-hooks, circles, whatever your preference would be. And it's only the grouper, snapper, grunts that have the circle hook law. You do not have to use circle hooks on permit, on amberjack. You do not have to use them on any of the reef species. They use whatever you like on cobia as well.
Yeah, any of your pelagic fish that are associated.
It's only those bottom reef species, grouper, snappers, that fall under the circle hook laws. So sea trout, all that, you can use whatever hook you prefer, J-hook, circle hooks. Now, my favorite hook, if I'm fishing for sea trout with a live shrimp or white bait or anything, and I have a bobber or a float on, is the Kaley hook, the wide gaps. They're much less expensive. They hook 99.9% of the time in the corner of the mouth. And every once about 15% of the time, they hook in the other corner of the mouth, because some fish are actually left-handed and swirl the other way.
Sure.
Most fish are right-handed, just like humans, but you have a certain percent that actually swirl the wrong way, and the hook will hook them in the other side of the mouth.
So the left-handed fish are also considered the smarter fish, too.
Is that so?
Could be.
I could be. You got to be a lefty.
I got to be.
Yeah, you got to be. I don't know how I do that.
Did you know that there are left-handed and right-handed?
I didn't know that, and I'm glad to know that it's
even in the animal world, you guys are rare and wondrous.
And the funny part is with flounder and halibut, it's almost the exact same percentage of left-handed fish as it is left-handed humans.
It's really funny. But, yeah, it holds true throughout the world. There is an odd set in almost every sector.
Weird, useless knowledge for the day.
That's right.
Boy, I'm glad you said the word knowledge after that. Okay. Kings and Spanish mackerel, what's going on out there? The weather's got a lot to do with king mackerel. We get a lot of questions about them. 68 to 72 is what king mackerel like the best. But
I'm going
to
disagree with that now. I think that's been changing over the last 10 years. Because for the last 10 years, it seems like there's been more and more fish showing up in that 78, 80 degree water temperature and sticking around a little bit longer. It seems like they're leaving us a little sooner when it gets below that 70 mark. It used to be, you know, that 60, 66, 68 to 72 mark was peak perfect time, but in the last couple of years, it seems like it's gone up just a couple of degrees. And, you know, it used to be they would show up in April offshore here. Now it seems like they're showing up in sometimes as early as March or as late as early May, right as the tarpon show up in really good numbers. And then it's like as the tarpon are leaving, the kings seem to be showing up. It's kind of weird because they're sticking around a little bit longer.
We've got some kings out there right now, and they're not going to continue south. I think they're going to go back north again because St. Pete is 77 degrees. Naples is 80 degrees. But Pensacola up by the panhandle is 72.
Right.
And so they've got 72-degree water up there. They're going to start heading back up north. We've got some kings here. They were coming south because the water temperatures were dropping. But they've stabilized, got a little better. 80 degrees in Naples, 77 in St. Pete, but Pensacola is still at 72. Key West not reporting right now.
Right.
We've got a cold front coming in this coming week.
And we're that's going to bring those king mackerel back. As soon as that cold front's done, we're going to have some great king mackerel fish.
I think if anything, they stay. You know, that they don't migrate as far. Maybe they get turned quicker or something like that instead of running all the way back up north, even though they can move it, let's say, 10 miles an hour, 24 hours a day. You know, it's a long ways for them to travel. I think those fish are going to stick around because the water temperature just off the beaches, 10 miles to 15 miles, have been pretty good. You know, lots of food around for them, you know, and the way this temperature is kind of going up and down a little bit, I think that's why they stick around a little bit longer rather than boogieing faster north or faster south.
And if you want to catch a bigger fish species and not get beat up like you do if you catch a tarpon, king mackerel is certainly a great fish to go for.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's an exciting fighter. They take off at high speed. You just don't get beat up as bad as you do hooking a tarpon a similar size.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and the other thing you can do is if you just want to catch that one kingfish of a lifetime, you know, you're fishing all day for one, maybe two fish, but the trick to that is stay inside of 25 feet of shore or inside of 25 feet of water or less and go out there and either drift or slow troll up and down the shoreline with a big blue runner. A ladyfish doesn't have to be alive. It can be dead, you know, but a lot of your biggest king mackerel that will ever be caught, and all the guys from the kingfish tournaments will tell you this, they all catch all theirs in mostly 18 to 25 feet of water, and they'll also fish right at the entrances to passes, but they like to stay right along the edge of the drop-off along those passes, and most of the time that's in that 18 to 25 feet of water drop-off mark. And they're fishing all day for one fish, but they're usually going to catch that 30 to 50-pound king mackerel. So it's useless knowledge, but they're swimming in by themselves or in pairs.
The bigger ones seem to be more by themselves. Smaller fish always school up together because they get eaten.
Yeah.
And so they hang out with other fish. It's kind of like us with you know, your identity theft. You know, we're just a big school of bait fish. Are they going to get us? Are they going to get the guy next to us? You know, it's funny, people try and hide their numbers and do all this. It has nothing to do with it. Everything's already out there. Tarpon. I hear a ton of tarpon out there right now.
Yeah.
And it's been, people always think of tarpon as the May, June event. Just a couple of years ago, we had tarpon loaded up in Boca Grande Pass in December. It was literally better tarpon fishing in December of that year than it was in May or June. There was more fish and no people.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty amazing.
What's going on with that right now?
Right now, there's been a lot of fish stacked in the pass and virtually nobody fishing for them. Only a handful of guys that really know what they're doing has been catching, been out there fishing for the tarpon in the pass. So there's also been some fish out on the beaches a little bit, and then there's also been a handful of fish in all of the holes throughout the whole harbor. So it's just a matter of getting out there and looking for them. But the ones in the pass, you know, they're catching them. Guys are catching them on shrimp while they're looking for snapper and sheep's head. You know, the other guys that are actually targeting them are using pinfish and squirrelfish primarily. A couple guys are using the bigger shrimp when you can get them, and the shrimp are starting to get bigger each day right now. So go out there and play with those if you want. Have your last opportunity with them.
Yeah, shrimp's been a little tough this year. People say, well, you know, they're calling every day to find out what kind of bait you've got. And one of the big problems is there's so many areas that have problems with red tide, even when we're fine and we have no problems at all. Shrimp trucks don't like to run for one store. I mean, every night boats go out and they got to run the boats, put the nets out, trawl the shrimp up, catch them, sort them, put them in a live well, then they're taken back, they get to the dock, they divide them up. And we buy and sell shrimp by the numbers on the west coast of Florida. You go to some places, they sell them by the pound. Some places sell them by the quart or the pint. On this coast, for some reason or other, they've always sold them by the numbers. We buy them by the hundreds or the thousands, and we sell them by the dozens. It's just how you're buying the stuff versus determines how you're selling the stuff.
Right.
If we were buying them by the pound, we'd be selling them by the pound.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's just the way it would be, which would actually be a better way of doing it. But that's not how it was always done, and I didn't get to set the rules, so this is how it works. But a lot of these places aren't ordering any bait, so the shrimp trucks cannot afford to run every day. We have one company that ran 6 days a week for the last decade, but now it's literally down to they're
almost
running three and
day.
4 days. Where we've never had to go through this before. Luckily, we're using a couple of different companies, and we're keeping up on it. But
unless the truck breaks.
Unless the starter breaks in the truck, and it takes them 3 days to put a starter on. It's three bolts, for God's sakes. Three. That's what it takes to replace a starter. It took them 3 days. Are you kidding me?
Well, they overhauled the whole truck, and then they got to the starter, and that was the thing that just left them hanging.
Oh, that's what was wrong with it. It was the starter. It wasn't the head gasket or the piston rings.
I don't believe it.
It doesn't matter. It's not out of our. It's all out of our control. So we just roll with it as best we can.
Keep rolling with it. Let's see. One of the things I want to circle back on is. Going back to the trout fishing, I'm hearing a little bit better sized trout down in Pine Island Sound, not quite as many, but as you get up north towards Boquilla, you've got kind of a mix between the 12, and then some of the bunches are a little bit bigger.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I've been hearing too, you know, from basically St. James City all the way up to the shacks there by Captiva Pass. Seems to be some bigger trout, and then as you work your way from Captiva up there to, say, Jug Creek, that's when it becomes a little bit more mixed. And then if you jump straight across the harbor up from Devilfish over to Placida, it seems like a mix of smaller trout with a few bigger trout, but then it starts to seem to beef back up again. I've gotten several reports this week for Lemon Bay with some better trout from, say, Stump Pass up past the Tom Adams Bridge.
Okay, I think the thing that's really making me wonder a little bit, big sharks out on the reefs, near shore, out in 60 feet of water, 30 feet of water, up to 12-foot nurse sharks. We're hearing big lemons, bull sharks, a lot of big sharks on those reefs out there right now. I don't really know that I consider that normal at this time of year.
Yeah, the only
guys
thing
are getting them grouper fishing.
The only thing that would make it normal to me is if those mullet actually ran offshore 2 weeks ago with that moon to spawn, the way they were all congregating. I could see that being a possibility, because usually you'll hear about that in that December full moon when all the mullet really boogie offshore. Those sharks get really excited, and that's what brings some of those sandbars and other sharks back in. So maybe some mullet ran offshore and did an early spawn this year and got them a little excited.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, if you're out grouper fishing right now and you've got a chunk of squid, sharks love to eat squid, by the way. It's one of their favorite things. Or bait fish down there, whatever. Don't be surprised if you're looking for a nice red grouper and all of a sudden you've got a 7-8 foot bull shark on, or a 10-foot nurse shark. I mean, this is very, very common right now, and more so than what I would consider normal. Just like we got a lot of little redfish. We're hearing stories about tiny redfish after tiny redfish. Actually amazing out there with how many small redfish there are.
Yeah, that might be super promising for next year's crop, you know, because, I mean, everyone's complaining about it. And then we had a banner season with some bigger redfish. Now we're hearing about the rat reds popping up in that 12 to 14-inch range all over the place.
I think it's surprising how many redfish that are 14, 12, 8, you know, smaller redfish just... Yeah. Thousands of them around.
And just the way they popped up out of nowhere is the weirdest part. It's that same timeline.
Speaking of popping up out of nowhere and popping into nowhere, I guess that's us right now. We're going to go back to nowhere. We're just going to go back and fade away. Fish and Frank here. Robert, the blind tarpon across from me. RJ, the man, the controller, the chaos creator. He's over there. And we're all gone. Thanks for listening, guys.
Fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line.